listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me the most frequent guest on this show, more often than any other single human being other than myself, Michael Oliver. Thank you for joining me again, Michael.
Good to be back, Jay.
Always good to have you, and I want to always tell my listeners, it's OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com. Michael is very kind. I think he offers a free sample of his work, so you can go there and request that. Better than that, I think if you get a sample and you're a serious investor, you most likely want to subscribe to his work. So, Michael, you know, the S&P 500 from your weekend report, there was something in there really caught my attention. Your quarterly momentum chart showed that four times since 2016 sometime, it dips down to a plus five, but stops abruptly there. It never reaches a plus four. The sinister side of me cries out, manipulation. How do you account for this continued defiance of gravity? I mean, it just seems like sooner or later that thing has to break, but how do you account for it, and what does it, maybe tell our listeners what it means?
When you look at momentum and look at price, you see two different vistas of a market, and we oscillate price against various means, moving averages. And in the case of a three-quarter moving average, which is roughly equivalent to a 200-day line, we've noticed that for a year now, every time you open the quarter, first quarter, second, third, and fourth quarter of this year, you open and you quickly down to 5% over the three-quarter average.
Mm-hmm.
You dip under 5, but you never get to 4. It's like 4.7, 4.1, 4.5. It's really ridiculous. And then you just spend the rest of the quarter rallying, 2, 3, 4%. Then you open the next quarter and you get a drop in the readings. Why? Because the three-quarter moving average jumps up. Why? Because we're in a rising market, the average rises. Okay, so again, measured against that rising mean, you drop down to that 5% level again, and you stop there. And so you can draw this big red line. I do it in my reports.
Yeah. Sure.
It's a year wide, and it's what you call a momentum structure. It is nowhere apparent on a price chart. You look at a price chart, you can't find those four lows lining up anywhere, but they
That's
do on
true.
Momentum. That's a structure. If you break, you're going down.
Uh-huh.
If this were a 3-week average oscillator or something like that, it wouldn't necessarily mean that much. It could break and get a sell-off, but this is a quarterly momentum chart. That's a big floor. You break it, you're going to at least go down to the three-quarter average, which is another 4% below 4%, so it's down in the low 2400s. So the number to touch, and I get specific only on this because it's broadcast widely anyway. It's a well-known number that I've put out. In our normal reports, we also specify shorter-term trigger numbers, but I won't
get
into those. But it's the number 2503.1.
Yes.
Now, that's right now, that's 80-some-odd points below. You say, well, that's a long way, but that's 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever touch 2503.1 during this quarter, you're going to blow out that entire floor. And my bet is you go down to the 2400 pretty rapidly. Now, it's late in the year, and going down to 2400, you still get a nice up year. There might be some support around that three-quarter average. I haven't seen it in a year and a half, by the way. It's a long time. So the return to the mean principle is in play here. But it puts you in a position that if that broke this year and got you down in that vicinity by the end of the year, and you open 2018 and you're playing around that 2400 level, you're starting to break annual stuff. In other words, a medium-sized guy falls over and hits the big guy. That's what I'm implying here. So we're very keen on anything that can precipitate a sell-off now and get us down that 3% to that 2503 level and trigger that quarterly momentum structure and get a real sell-off underway. Now, most people would consider, if you get a 4% or 5% sell-off, that's a correction, big deal, right?
Yeah.
Well, for us it is, because it puts the market in a position that is extremely awkward when you get into next year in terms of breaking much larger momentum trend structures.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking at right now. We're not looking for any collapse this year, no crash. I'm not looking for that. I'm just looking for a wobble that says, okay, legs are broken. This beast is going down, probably in phases. But the first thing we need is that bit of a landslide. And there's some short-term things that are like 10 points below the market right now that if you hit, it could get you rolling in that direction. And that's one of the key asset categories I also think that needs to contribute to the shift in investor sentiment away from stocks toward commodities. And I think that shift is underway, but that would definitely help precipitate more movement in that direction. Upset the stock folks a little bit, and they go somewhere else. And commodities, after all, if you look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index, nobody notices this, but since June, there was a low in June, it's risen 11% since June. And that's the basket of commodities. And
right now, nobody's paying attention.
This week's high, it's 2 points. It traded up to 88. The high of the last couple of years is 90. We're a couple points away from the multi-year highs. But nobody notices it. Despite the objective measurements, you can prove that something is doing well. But everybody's fixated on stocks. So we need a little shin kick there, and I think it'll move some money around.
Well, I guess nothing like a good slap upside the head with those kind of corrections you're talking about. Again, people won't see it on a chart, on a price chart, but you're looking at it on your momentum charts, and what you see is something that most people don't notice, that that momentum reading there. And I've seen it work. This is why you're on the show almost whenever I can get you, because I've just seen it work. It's been very, very helpful to me, Michael. And let's talk about the dollar. I'm hearing a lot of people claim that the dollar has fallen about as much as it's likely to fall now. I think we've had enough already. So most people seem to be pretty bullish on the dollar now. They think this is probably it in terms of the downside risk, but I don't think you believe that.
We don't. Admittedly, the rally is justified. I mean, you dropped from a 103.5 high late last year, early this year, on the dollar index, down to 91. That's a 12.5 point drop. Mm-hmm. Much of that occurred from about April through a low a few months ago, several months ago. So much of that occurred mid-year. You've had since then a four-point rally, 91 to 95. Right now we're in the 94s. So you rally back about a third, something like that, and it's taken you several months to get that much rally. The argument for the dollar is usually fundamentally driven. Well, rates are going to go up here. Okay, well, I agree with that. Rates are going up. They've gone up. In fact, our 10-year note... we usually focus on the 30-year bond, but let's look at the 10-year note. It's risen in yield since its low yield summer of 2016, 0.9%.
Mm-hmm.
10-year U.S. government bonds risen 0.9%.
Mm-hmm.
The German Bund, competing with it, okay, has risen 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gained, you know, almost twice as much yield as they have, or Italy or any other country in Europe, thanks to the ECB, artificially keeping rates low. You would think that should help the dollar, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the argument. We're going to get higher rates here. Well, we've gotten higher rates, and yet the dollar's dropped. And besides, there are other factors in play in the Forex markets other than competitive interest rates. That argument is so obvious that everybody knows it, and sometimes that, yes, it's a truism that impacts the performance of one currency versus another, the varying rate structures. Mm-hmm. The trends of those rates, but there are other factors in play, and we don't pretend to define what those fundamentals are because there's too many of them.
Yeah.
You never know which one that might be a minor one on somebody's list that is actually more important now than some of the obvious ones. So we look at the technicals, and the technicals of the dollar broke down in April and May, especially in May, as it came down through 99, decisively breaking that level, and dropped 8 more points rapidly. And has since spent, spun its wheels for several months and gained all 4 points. And it's a very wobbly rally. It's not a solid one. And I think it's just a counter-trend rally. And I have to ignore, though I respect many of the people who are holding the position, the dollar's going back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Because the structures that we broke on the dollar index, if you saw an annual momentum oscillator of the dollar index, forget the price chart, you would see something, it would drop your jaw, and you would say, oh, that's broken.
Yeah.
And therefore, we view rallies as counter-trend rallies.
Michael, on the index, what sort of a downside target do you see in the next year?
Well, our first target for support was, and it'll change next year, actually, get a little lower, but it was 88. And we got to 91, so we didn't get close enough. And frankly, there's a zone from about 84 to 88 that we think is a pocket where at that point you could get a nice, you know, rally that lasts several quarters maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we haven't gotten to a make sense level for us as far as a low that makes any sense. The 91 low makes zero sense to us at all, technically speaking. It's just right in the middle of nowhere. And usually you'll find that when a market makes a lower high, if you're doing your homework, you can say, aha, now I can see why it did that. But I don't see the explanation for it, and not in our work, and therefore I tend to trust that that's not the low. This is a futile rally. So there is a large crowd. I agree. There is a lot of people talking about dollars going to turn back up and make new highs. And we could be wrong, but I just think it's too broken.
Yeah. Well, you could be wrong, but I mean, I don't see it happen very often. Let's talk about the T-bond. You mentioned the 10-year, the T-bond. I mean, what's your target on that thing now? You're still very bearish on that, right?
I'm looking for them to get in sync more with the bunds, the German bunds, and the Japanese government bonds. Next year, they all have structures on their annual momentum charts that go back about 10 years. When you look at a price chart, you see this rising price or dropping yield, and all of them. But when you look at a momentum chart, an annual momentum chart of those three markets, the 30-year bond here, or the 10-year note in Germany and in Japan, they have this clear floor. It's even bigger than the one we were talking about on the S&P on the quarterly momentum. They have it on annual momentum charts. Mm. In fact, the JGB has the ugliest momentum structure I have ever seen on any market, pending right below it. And the JGB trade futures, and the bunds also have futures. They're actively traded. So we plot those, and for instance, we're about a point and a half away in the JGBs, and when I say a point and a half, they're trading above 150. Just below 150 next year, the 149s, I'm going to blow a 10-year floor.
Wow.
Annual momentum at the zero line, and it was at the 3-year moving average, which they've religiously held on to for years. And it just looks like when you blow that, it's the bridge on the River Kwai. It's coming down. So I tend to think it's a next year event, and therefore we're wasting time in the bonds and the bunds and the JGBs between now and the end of the year, just sort of spinning around here, confusing the situation. But the annual momentum structure on the government bonds is ugly. Mm. It looks, pardon me, I'll use the word inevitable. The proximity of these breakage points on all these three markets is so close to current price levels that it's all you have to do is sneeze. And what I want to see is some unity. I don't just want the UST bonds to break their floor on momentum. I want to see the bunds and the JGBs do it too, and I think they will.
So I'm
sort of sitting on my hands on that, but I think that's a big event for next year.
Boy, I guess it would be if we start to see a sudden surge in interest rates and the cost of borrowing money at a time when the government's finances continue to spin out of control. Then isn't that going to tempt the Fed to going to have to start printing more and more, probably remaining behind the curve, much as the 1970s? Perhaps, Michael, where they are not able to, you know, they know they got the rates are the market's going to pull rates up whether the Fed likes it or not. Is that what you believe?
That's what I believe. The overnight stuff I don't care about. We go out 10 years and 30 years, and that is ultimately going to be controlled by market forces. And even if to some extent they do exert an influence and have exerted an influence over those longer rates. But I think that influence is coming undone. That's what I'm seeing in the momentum structures. And I also see a food fight coming in the commodity sector where the eating commodities, cattle and grains, and the soft commodities, cocoa, sugar, coffee, are impending explosive upside situations where I think it's likely to happen by early next year. And I think it could be very sharp, very fast, shocking in effect, and because that component of the commodity complex has not contributed so far. And when it comes into gear, their 2% goal of inflation is going to be achieved and then some. And then what are they going to do? Right. If the stock market gets rattled because of that, because interest rates get rattled because of that, because of rising commodity prices, what are they going to do? Tighten?
Yeah, I mean, that's the conundrum they're going to be up against. There's no question. I mean, sooner or later, we knew this was going to have to happen. Yeah. But it seems what's interesting to me is your plate tectonics make a lot of sense in what they're telling us. I mean, they seem to make sense. For example, if you're having rising interest rates, they're going up with inflationary pressures. But we're seeing this sort of the two major bull markets, the debt and the equity markets now coming to an end, seemingly, although the S&P isn't really cooperating yet, seemingly, although you pointed out we're very close to it. But then we're seeing the rise in inflation. And so, Michael, with 2 minutes left here, where does that leave us with respect to gold then? I mean, gold was a leader for the commodity complex. It's sort of arm wrestling now, I think is a term you like to use.
It is.
Where is gold headed in 2018?
The number I'm looking at above is now a price-based number. Why? Because my momentum work, annual momentum, quarterly, and so forth, it's all turned positive.
Yeah.
We've blown through every high the last 3 or 4 years on those oscillators, and therefore they're positive. Now, if price were breaking out over multi-year highs and momentum weren't, I wouldn't trust price. But the reverse is happening. Momentum, annual momentum, we've already taken out last year's oscillator high on a three-year average oscillator. And whereas price got within $20 of it, a few months ago, got to 1358. Last year's high was 1377. So we didn't take it out, but a momentum we already did. Then we backed up. Now, what there is on the price chart, I do give respect to now, because there is a massive, gradually declining line that goes back a couple of years on gold. You can plot it on weeklies or monthlies. I do it on weekly through the closes. And basically says, if you close out a week at 1350, you're gone. Price chart's breaking out of its base. And I would trust the price chart breakout because momentum has already done it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an overhead number to look at. In fact, you don't need a momentum chart to see it. Now, below, I'm always looking around because people get anxious whenever you get a dip.
But
we've had a sell-off here recently. And I'm not rock solid on this. And I tend to think even if it breaks, it's probably a trap. But I don't want to see 1240s to 1230s. So far, low has been above 1260. Right now, we're trading 1277. So, and we've been grinding to a halt here the last few weeks. In fact, I think maybe the sell-off is trying to end here. I would watch the euro in that regard. The euro's had a sell-off. It looks to me like it's trying to put an end to the sell-off. And if it flips back up, and this is a logical area for it to do it, I think that'll help gold reassert itself. So gold is doing well. It's done better on a year-to-year basis for the last 2 years than has the commodity complex. So it's still ahead of that group, despite its recent back-off. And I think it'll maintain a leadership position among commodities.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that. Michael, thank you so much for your insights, for your wonderful technical work,
which is such
a blessing to us and our listeners. We hope to have you back again next week if you're available. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Jake. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we do have to go to commercial break, but don't go away because Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff is going to be with us. He has some really interesting observations about the relative strength of the financial situation in the United States versus China and Russia. But unlike many economists, Lawrence, I think, actually has some positive suggestions. We want to hear what he has to say about what the country should do and what you and I should do to try to protect ourselves against what might be some rocky times ahead. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.